Welcome to the Business Isn't Usual podcast by Right Way. I'm your host, Stuart Wilkinson. Today is the second episode of our election series special as we speak to all the major party small business spokespeople. And today it's national and we catch up with Andrew Bailey. Andrew is also the MP for Hanua and he also is a spokesperson for a number of other portfolios. Today we go over a national's policy, but also we get a wider context from Andrew and what he sees affecting small business at the moment, and also what is important for businesses to be focusing on over the next 12 to 24 months. We hope you enjoy this podcast. If you do, please subscribe on the platform where you're listening to this podcast. And also check us out on social media. We're on all the main channels, and it's a great way of keeping up to date with podcast episodes, but also other content from Right Way. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you, Stuart.
So we've got online, we're having a chat, and I've started with these conversations that, you know, we've obviously starting to hopefully come out the back end of COVID-19, the actual health part, but we're going into the economic part of what this is doing to the country and to businesses. And I guess it's always good to get a sense from your angle on what has been the effect for you've seen at the coalface for small businesses, and what's the feedback you've been getting from business owners, Andrew?
Yeah, well, I agree with you, Stuart. We have started to come out of the health crisis, and that's a great thing. We're about to, and have already started to some extent, the economic crisis. I don't want to sound overly dramatic, but I think this is going to go on for maybe 3 to 4 years. And I'm going to cover that later, why I have that view. I have spent some time door knocking all my businesses in my electorate. I'm Hanua, it's currently Hanua, but it's a Port Waikato electorate, and that includes places like Pukekohe, Waiuku, Pokeno, all these sort of smaller rural towns. And whilst you can find some businesses that are doing okay, like the mechanic shops and things like that, the real problem is the high street. We're just been dramatically impacted, and they are really in a bad spot, and mainly because a lot of them, and it's not just retail, of course, there's other sectors, but they're reaching the stage where they run out of cash. And whilst I think the living wage was a great thing during the initial lockdown, and that was fine, it was 50% of the average wage, the reality was that small business owners often had to top that up, even if it was the 80%. Yep. So that was the first bit of cash that they used. The second bit they've had to rely on now is there's been absolutely no support around rental arrangements. I did a costing of what that would cost for the government. The Reserve Bank government, a governor had, or the Reserve Bank, did an estimate of the value of industrial and commercial properties about 3 years ago, Stuart, and came out with a value of about $180 billion. And if you use the 6 to 6.5% dividend property yield, you can work out the numbers, but basically if the government had put in place a 50% rental support package, it would have cost them about $320 a month for a 50% rental support package on the 2/3 of industrial and commercial buildings that are rented. And I think in the scheme, we've spent $15 billion already, and that was the missing element. If they hadn't done that, the very least they should have done is adopted the Australian dispute mechanisms, because we've still got so many smaller businesses in dispute with landlords. And I'm not saying all of them have been bad, but we've still got some. I just went to Albert Street in Auckland the other day, and some of the stories I'm hearing. And so they've had to write out a check for their missing bit of the top of the wages, had no support about rental, and of course overheads, which normally represent about 40% of anyone's business on average, they've all tuned their cash. So now they're in cash flow shortage. They've got no cash. And all this idea about this shonky dreamed up by people who've never owned a business of talking about pivoting. I've owned many businesses. I'll tell you what, when you want to change a business, I'll tell you the three ingredients. First of all, you've got to have the intellectual space to try and work out what you're going to do. The second thing is it takes time. You've got to work out, do all the modeling, all that sort of stuff. And the third thing, most important thing, you've got to have the cash to be able to do it. Now, when you run out of cash in your day-to-day business and the talk of pivoting, it ain't going to happen. And so what really worries me, Stuart, is that leading up to Christmas, some people choose to trade up to then. post Christmas, unfortunately, there's only one place to go in a business when you want to stop costs, and that is to fire people. And yep. unfortunately, I think we're going to see a lot more people lose their jobs.
Yeah, and I think you sort of going on from that, Andrew, we know in our trade that going into summer for a lot of businesses is the make or break time. You know, seasonal businesses, especially hospitality and that sort of accommodation, you know, we know those sectors already been hit. So it is, I guess, while things seem positive on, as I said, on the health front, there is, you know, we know from our opinion working with our clients that there is a long road ahead here. So I guess getting into some of your policies, Andrew, and it was, you know, let's start with what you've announced today. So for everyone on the podcast, this is Monday, the 28th of September. So, you know, you've talked there about pivoting in the sense it takes a lot of mental capacity, but there is a lot of strain, and we've had stories of, you know, clients, you know, at despair of what to do, especially, you know, in that April time when it was really tough. But you guys announced today, you know, support around mental health. Do you want to just talk us through that policy and also why you felt this was so important?
Hey, well, my reading about talking to business owners and also their staff is that many people are highly stressed. And most of it's to do with financial stress. Mm. And a lot of it also is to do with the thought of losing their jobs. You know, there was that recent survey where people employed were assessing their own likelihood of being made redundant, and 185,000 thought they'd lose their jobs over the next year or so. So that's worrying, you know, in the background of any married couple or single people on their own, really worrying about whether they've got a future, whether they're going to have the money to pay their rent and mortgage or whatever. So I've obviously been very concerned about it. So I've worked very closely with our mental health spokesperson called Matt Ducey. He's the MP for Waimakariri in South Island. Matt is a professional in mental health. He's worked in it in London and back here in New Zealand. And what we want to do and what we've announced today is that we want to work through the Chambers of Commerce, the Business New Zealand Network, and also regional economic development agencies, because we think they're the best people based locally and allow them to access a fund that we've set up. And we put an initial figure of $10 million into it. And so these people, these organizations will be able to identify the health provider, mental health provider locally, who any of their members can come to them and they can say, well, look, we've engaged so-and-so. We think they're really good based here in Masterton or whatever it is. Mm. And then they can access those services. Because the missing bit we find, if I go into a big company, most big companies can resources. They've got specialist health people. They bring them all in. And I've worked in some bigger organizations. It's the small to medium size entity that doesn't have a specialist health person or health and safety person in the organization that has this experience. So this is what it's about, filling the gap.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I know Xero, who one of our, I guess, main partners have Craig Hudson's led the charge there around mental health. And, you know, they've put some surveys out, and this was before COVID, and the numbers are pretty scary about the weight that business owners take on their shoulders of not only the business, but then what that can mean, you know, for them individually and for their families. I think it's, you know, I won't use the exact language, but one of our clients used is he wouldn't really advise many people get small business because it's tough. Like, it is a tough world, and particularly now the mental stress that it can put on business owners. So good to see, you know, you guys are obviously wanting to put some support there, because it's a tough game at the moment for business owners.
Yeah. And the other thing we've announced today, Stuart, is continuing the theme around helping businesses get the skill they need. So we had announced a small business package and a business start scheme, which was had a various elements to it. So the small business scheme, what we've said is, if you're in a situation, you're lucky enough, you're an exporter, you haven't been badly affected by COVID, what we want you to do is to take on additional staff if you can. And we're going to incentivize you to the tune of $10,000, which basically reflects the cost of hiring someone. We want to try and get good companies who can to take on more people. It's limited to 10 people per company. It's a $500 million package. That idea is to try and pick up some of the slack of these people who have been made unemployed and to get them into good businesses. That's the first thing. We've also announced a business start scheme, which is targeted someone, and I typically use an airline pilot, who has suddenly found himself or herself out of a job, not because they're a bad person, but, you know, highly skilled, but there's an industry just gone pear-shaped. And what we've said to those people, look, go away and do a proper business plan. We'll give you some money to get checked by an accountant or a certified financial planner type person. If you think you're right, and we want to make sure only the right people are doing this, then if you want to set up a business and if you're an airline pilot, you'll be digitally enabled, you'll be smart, all that sort of stuff. What we'll allow you to do is to access up to 20,000 of your KiwiSaver. So hopefully people got more than that. And also we'll give the first 10,000 of the tax that you have to pay, whether it's GST or income tax, we'll give that to you in effect free. So that's 30,000 set aside to help these people try and take control of their own life rather than sit up in the house wondering where they're going to get a job from when they're 45 to 55. They can maybe set up their own business, do that, have some bit of money that they can get from us and through their KiwiSaver and get underway. The third thing is we also have announced a tech growth strategy, and I was involved in that because there's certain sectors that can grow us out of this quagmire, economic quagmire, and tech is one of those highly aggressive industry in terms of its growth rates. Great opportunity. New Zealand's wonderfully set up for it. Can be done remotely, all those good advantages. So we want to double the size of the tech sector by from 8 billion to 16 billion. And there's a number of elements to it, but one of the elements, just coming back to skills things, is we want to attract people from overseas who want to come and work in this sector. So we're going to attract PhDs, also highly skilled people, give them preferential right to come in here, work in the tech sector in New Zealand, help us to grow it. It's dynamically growing anyway, but you know, skills, access to skills, one of those key barriers. We're going to also focus on R&D as part of that package. And so just try and drive that. And also we're trying to attract investors to come and set up in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And the fourth thing we've done today, sorry, it's a bit of a ramble, but the fourth thing we've done today is the Skill Start scheme, which is what you're referring to. So it just builds on the tech thing. We want to help, for instance, those under 25, we want to put in place a mentor for them to help identify where they're going to grow, what job opportunities they might be, how they position themselves. Also some stuff around older people in terms of 12-week training program to just rapidly, I call it micro skills training. So you might go and do a certain part of a building project, right? You could learn those skills quickly. It doesn't mean that you can build a house, but gee, you might be able to put up some block laying or whatever it might be. And hopefully also other range, not just those types of jobs, but a wide cross section. And to try and give people the ability to quickly say, all right, I was an airline pilot, but I'm going to go and do this job, and at least it gives me the money on the table. And by the way, I'm going to feel better about myself and all those other things that come with it. Now, the scheme we announced today has got about 7 elements to it, so I'm not going to go through all of them, but they're all designed and targeted at different facets, different components of those who might want to get a job or need to reskill.
Yeah. Going back to your KiwiSaver sort of initiative, Andrew, you know, and you sort of label this under the big section you've got in your policies around accessing capital, is, you know, one of the things I think we've seen is that, you know, times in New Zealand for a long time have been economically good. You know, business has been strong, you know, revenue growth for a lot of companies has been strong. But we hit this cliff of COVID, and then we have got a lot of clients who and business owners who are very clued up, but there is a lot who think the financials are sort of just a bit of a nuisance and are put to the side and are there for the IRD. I guess a question we've got is, while it's awesome to get some more capital into businesses and give better options for people, is how do you think we help financial literacy for business owners? Because this is probably highlighted more than ever in our experience, anyway, that there is a gap there. And there was a lot of people, I was speaking to a friend who's a banker, and he was saying there's a lot of companies that run off the P&L, but they don't have a clue about their balance sheet. And this is, I guess, COVID has exposed flaws that have been in their businesses, which could have been dealt with, but have not been because times are good. So I guess, what's your thoughts around how we improve financial literacy and, I guess, capability of business owners?
Yes, hey, it's a perennial problem. And successive governments have put money into business mentoring. There's already the regional business partnership scheme that you'll probably be aware of.
Yeah, we've done a bit
through
that. Which
means that people can tap into experts in their particular sector, and there might be a restaurant or something. You get a restaurateur who's a real expert. So that's all good stuff. We've also just announced the Small Business Accelerator, which is one of the package of these seven policies this morning, which is a dedicated fund to deliver management training to business owners. Mm. You're right. Financial literacy is in places, particularly with small rather than medium-sized, but small yes. businesses. They run it off the back of what's in the bank.
Yep.
Unfortunately, businesses are a lot more sophisticated than that now. And it's a problem, isn't it? That people, I'm actually a trained accountant, although I've never really acted one. But, if you looked at your P&L, your balance sheet and your cash flow, you'd say, which is the most important? Well, I'd argue the cash flow statement is the most important.
Yeah.
But most companies, they do a P&L and they do a balance sheet, but they're not worried about the cash flow statement. So it's great that you've done all these sales, but when are you going to get paid?
Yep.
And when do you have to pay your suppliers? All those sort of things, that's the credit crunch. What I've been saying, just simple stuff, these 500 businesses I've been walking around here locally, what I've said to a lot of them, and particularly to the shopkeepers, is I've said, look, this is going to go on for a long period of time. You need to destock if possible.
Yep.
Most places have too much stock. Destock, cash it up, and put the money in the bank and have it there for a rainy day, because the rainy day is happening now.
Yep.
And so you've got to, managing your cash flow around managing your debtors and also your creditors, how you manage that working capital when you buy stock, all that stuff is so vitally important. Now, you, through your group, of course, will be providing that advice, but yep. so many people don't worry about it. And unfortunately, they're going to be tested incredibly so over the next months and years, actually.
Yeah, and I think you're right. There's always been, business mentors. New Zealand are there. There's plenty of avenues that if people want support, there's plenty of help. And I guess the accounting industry as a whole has made great gains, and I guess moving to more advisory space and supporting clients on that. But I guess it's been an interesting question that, we talk, at this high level, especially around policy of, billions of dollars and stuff. But some of these fundamentals that we see in business are so important to build confidence into employing people, because, hey, I've got the confidence that I can afford this. It's that micro aspect that could make a huge difference, I guess, to the confidence of how we move forward.
Hey, so Stuart, just on that, we were very mindful of this. So in our small business package that we announced 3 weeks ago, there's five elements, but one of them actually deals with this issue of cash flow. So we've said, look, it is absolutely outrageous that the government doesn't pay its bills quickly.
Mm.
We've got all access to everything. So in most cases that happens, but we know of many instances where it's not happening through government agencies. So we're going to require everyone to pay within 10 working days. The other thing we've got, when large contractors and head contractors particularly, and it might be building construction, but I'm not just focus on that. But you know, there's large companies that hold tenders, hold the tender, because they're the ones, particularly if they're doing a government job, that have the opportunity to take the head tender. We're going to work on a voluntary basis, but to make sure that these people are paying their bills on time. And so, companies like Fonterra is an example. I'm not holding these all out as bad examples, but I'm just saying we're going to make sure our top companies, as much as we can, commit to paying on time, because where it hurts, it's not the big companies, it's the subbies that get burnt. Yeah. that the people go out of business simply because someone chooses not to pay them or pay them in on 33 days or 31 days, so they miss the cutoff date, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Moving on to, I guess, another, I guess, definite theme of National's policy around small business is there's a lot about your reduction of red tape. And the one area I wanted to start with is your sort of review of Employment Relations Act. And you've talked a lot about in your policy there. Why do you think this needs a bit of a review and a look at, you know, in your policy?
Hey, well, Stuart, we think it's essential that we create the right environment for people to employ more people, particularly as people have been made redundant in increasing numbers over the forthcoming period. And so we don't want to have any disincentive to employing people. So in terms of the Employment Act, we want to extend the 90-day working trial. Obviously, there's differing views on it, but we think right now in the middle of a recession, that's probably not a bad thing because it takes some of the risk away from employers taking the risk of taking someone on. So we're going to extend that past the 20 people limit on a firm limit. The other thing we're going to do is just look at the tribunal rights. When there is a legitimate reason to have a dispute between an employer and employee, we just think the arrangements there are not working well. And I just want to put it on the record. Look, there are some employers that are not good employers, and I hope they get drummed out of business. I want to put that, be really blunt. But sometimes there are legitimate disputes that happen. We just don't think the arrangements for resolving those are very clear. They certainly take a long period of time. There's an inevitability that you're going to end up having to pay a substantial amount if you're trying to terminate employment. Often the figure of 20,000 is quoted. So what happens, we get a practice where employers just literally write out a check to someone for 10,000 and say, go, move on. We want to clarify it, speed it all up, make it happen. It's like anything in life. If you've got a problem, deal with it quicker. But at the moment, we've got a system that doesn't allow it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's no doubt, I think the 90-day trial law, which was in practice, obviously, under the previous national government for a while, was a good way for each. And I think this is the one thing that most people, I think, forget about is it's just to benefit the employee as well, because there are so many times employees rock up. And as you said, Andrew, the employee's not, it's not what it's said on the tin, you know, as such. And so it does remove some pressure on the employer. I think they can maybe go, hey, look, this seems like a good candidate, but their reference might not have been too flash, but hey, look, what we think of this person is great, so let's give this a go. I think it's, you know, when we want to get people into seats and we want to get people working, let's reduce some friction there.
Yeah.
So you talked about earlier, Andrew, the job start scheme, which is where you'd pay, is it the $10,000 sort of incentive if you employ? Is that applicable for everyone, or how does that work? What, is there some qualifications to that sort of process?
Yeah, just generally, there's a limit of 10,000 and 10 employees per employer. So we don't want someone taking on hundreds of people and soaking up all the money. But it's a $500 million package. So we're reasonably ambivalent about what type of jobs. You know, they're going to be full-time jobs. It's paid in two steps. So you get $5,000 on the person joining, and then if they get past the 90-day period, then they, and you know, obviously agree to continue to work, there's a subsequent payment at that point. So we're not silly enough to give people money and then see it all just frittle out back. And we want proper jobs. We're incentivizing people to have proper full-time jobs.
But that could be any level of business. So if I'm a hospitality business and I need a new head chef, or I've got to hire an extra chef on top of my current workforce, so I'm going from 10 to 12 employees or 11 employees, that they would be encountered in this, or is it for a certain qualification?
What we don't want to pay is if you're going to take on a casual, you know, it's a proper, you know, within the rules, you know, we'll write the rules up specifically, but the intent is a proper full-time job. And don't, what do I mean proper? I mean, it's a full-time position that the company's been advertising or wants someone for, not a made-up position that, you know, collapses 3 months later type stuff.
Yeah, someone to work the system to get $10,000 and not...
And unfortunately, you've got to plan for things like that.
You do. You do. There's always the 1% to 2% or whatever you want to call it, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, there is. Finally, Andrew, I think before we kind of talk about some different stuff, there is a big section also, you know, and I'd call it the section called Less Red Tape for Small Business. And this applies to repealing of the Resource Management Act, review of WorkSafe. There's also a bunch around tax, which as accountants we love, but business owners kind of not so much. Is, you know, but there is, a general theme of, you know, efficiency gain here of making things smoother, making things easier. And is there a sense here, Andrew, that we've got too bureaucratic, or why the need for this, I guess?
And this is a choice. If I go back up a level here, Stuart, this is a choice. We're going from $57 billion of debt to $100 billion by the end of this election, 2 weeks' time, or two and a half. We will have $200 billion, so we've doubled and then doubled it again over the course of the next 4 years. We can only grow our way out of this problem. You know, raising tax thresholds on the top earners brings in $500 million. Our annual interest cost this year is $3.5 billion, which is the cost that it takes to run the New Zealand Police Force. And that is before we double the debt again. So we need to work out a way to pay off this debt. It's going to take a generation. The only way is to grow the economy. So that's the big choice, and that's what we focus on. So one of the important things we've done, which we haven't talked about yet, and I've pushed this in terms of manufacturing role as well, but the big issue that we've announced is that we're allowing firms to write off immediately $150,000 on any new productive piece of equipment. And beyond that, if it's got a price higher than $150,000, we will allow you to double the depreciation. So if it's depreciated over 8 years, you can now depreciate over 4 years for that balance above the $150,000. That is all about stimulating the economy. It's also recognizing some businesses have done well. So we want them to invest that in good plant and equipment particularly, so they become more productive and grow and makes New Zealand a more economically viable place. So that is a strong, strong driver. So a lot of this is about investment drive. How do we improve the background or the environment so business can grow? On the other side, which you're talking about compliance costs, we just want to be a bit careful about that. We're a bit worried about WorkSafe. I actually sat on the WorkSafe committee all those years ago. I don't think it's quite landed where certainly me on that committee nor some of my contemporaries thought it would end up. We want to make sure that WorkSafe is working proactively, constructively with New Zealand businesses, not in a manner that obstructs. And I think we just need to make sure it's fit for purpose. It's not necessarily a criticism about WorkSafe, but we're not sure that it's actually delivering what we really hoped it would. And then we're also going to do as a small business, if we get into power, what we're going to do is we're going to get all the big government departments, Stats New Zealand, IRD, MB, who do all those business returns, all these sort of entities together, in one room and say, right, you all ask for the same information of a business owner. We want you to stop it. We want you to ask once.
Yep, which makes sense. I get just to take a before we finish up, Andrew. I think it's a really good opportunity to hear from your experience, and because business owners at the moment, you know, they're dealing with change. They're dealing with having to make some tough decisions sometimes in their business, and whether that's to their staff or what they do with the business. Like, what's your advice to business owners on how they deal with this change and how they deal with making tough decisions? You know, you've obviously operated your own businesses previously, and obviously an MP exposed to these sort of things. So what's your advice to business owners when you come to decision making?
Hey, well, look, I think a lot of people have got to learn to lean on people with experience. People have been through these situations, and it's not necessarily family, actually. Having family support is really, really crucial. Don't get me wrong. But I think when you're talking about complicated business decisions, about what it might mean, how you might operate in the future, The strategies you can pursue. I've never met a business that doesn't have a strategy, what's to do. It's a question of whether it can implement them. And I think getting access to good advice, obviously your firm does a lot of that work, but also cash flow management, but also just experts in the field about how you might look at your business a different way, how you might set it up. Because my advice is plan for the next 3 to 4 years that we're going to be in quite a difficult financial situation, both here in New Zealand, but also internationally. And I think the more people are cognizant, practical, conservative, and aware of that fact and plan for it, the more we will see good businesses come out the other end, which is what we're all after. We want everyone to succeed. And in many cases, just be prudent and conservative.
Yeah, I completely agree. Another sort of, I guess, aspect we're asking all the people in this series is as MPs now, you're in marketing mode, you're in sales mode, marketing yourself to your constituents and to New Zealand. So what can business owners learn from MPs about marketing and sales?
Well, actually, interesting. I've taken some of the marketing I learned from business into politics. So I'm probably the only MP that has a CRM system.
Oh, really?
So I have 9,000 contacts on my phone, loaded, recorded, categorized, and I keep a record of who I talk to and when. The thing about business people, about MPs, I suppose we have to do things much more verbally. And we don't spend enough time writing and strategizing enough, which is the one advantage you do have in business. But the thing about an MP, working out the key message, working out how to sell it, and you've got to be ruthless. You just got to get out. Like my first election, I door knocked 12,000 homes.
Yeah,
that's walking the street. I could normally do about 300 a day, so you can work out how many days that took. And that just trying to work out how to connect with people is probably the biggest skill of an MP. But, you know, you can't be all about that. You've got to have a bit of substance behind you, and you've got to have your thinking right, because you can't go out. You need to know what your message is. It's the same if you're selling a product, marketing yourself, you know, all the modern techniques that businesses have to have now. Great product, that's the first thing. Is it going to be produced reliably? Then how do you package it up? How do you distribute it? How do you make people aware of it? You know, social media is such a big thing. And, of course, we're all on that game, which is a bit of a two-edged sword, unfortunately. And just building personal relationships. When I had business, and I think I've had 14 of them, but just spending the time connecting with people and clients and suppliers and all that sort of stuff, vital that you do that, and it's all about FaceTime.
Yeah, I completely agree. So just picking up on that, Andrew, why do you think a CRM is important?
Say that again.
Why do you think a CRM is important? You've obviously set up a CRM, so why do you think it's important?
Because I've got so many thousands of people I meet. And if I wanted to announce my mental health package to small business people, I've got lists of people I've probably got 2,000 names, 3,000 names I can access. Straight away, so I can distribute the message. So it's just like everyone else. And I meet people, and a lot of it's very personal details. I can't keep all that detail on my mind, and it's just a good way of being disciplined and making sure I'm connecting. And also, as an MP, what I do, I've got 14 communities. And so every time I drive through a community, I'm thinking, what have I done in that community? Have I been here? What have I do here? What should I be doing? What's the next step? You know, it's just like business. You know, you need to be that disciplined about, when did I last talk to that supplier? What about that distribution arrangement, that trucking arrangement? I wonder if that, you know, it's all those sort of thinking of just having that in mind. But, you know, business is all about access to information now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, the big thing I think about CRM is what it is. It's, you know, you've got to know your customers now you know what they're about and be able to communicate, I guess, the way they want to be communicated and deal with. So I think that's a really good piece of advice. I think it's awesome. And I think final question, Andrew, what is your advice to business owners over the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, be conservative, share the load, not only with the family, but those hard decisions, try and involve other people, professional advisors like your firm, but get as wide an input, but hey, make a decision. But it's not going to get better quicker. Assume it's not. Assume we're going to be in bad times for a while. And I don't want to sound over pessimistic, but I do believe that it's going to be the situation. If I was running a business right now, that's what I'd be planning for.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thanks for your time, Andrew. Thanks for your time, Andrew. I know you've got a busy time, so thanks very much for taking the time to speak to us.
Hey, thanks, Stuart. Really good.
Thanks.